Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Inside Track, Equibase's weekly handicapping podcast, where we give our analysis, picks, and wagers for a couple of the weekend's top races across North America. I'm your host, Ben Kula with Equibase. I'm joined again today by Corey Patton, a stats-driven handicapper and also the CEO and founder, co-founder of Promana Labs, which creates all of the Statlines handicapping content at Equibase.com. Please be sure to check that out on the Equibase homepage for the Statlines top plays, as well as Statlines for each and every race every day on the entries page on Equibase.com. So welcome. This is always a blast, Corey. We had fun with the Breeders' Cup recap last week. Not going to toot my own horn. I did go 2-for-2.
You did.
In Battle of Normandy. I know what integration was like, 8-5. But
I'm fully expecting you not to bring that up this week, Ben. You know, I understand. Yeah, you did. You know. You nailed it.
I appreciate it. But anyway, so we will get to some handicapping later in the show. But today we have a special guest joining us, Grant Forrester, a multiple graded stakes winning trainer based in Kentucky and Louisiana with 339 career wins under his belt. Fantastic trainer who truly loves and cares about his horses and clients. So without further ado, here is Grant Forrester. Welcome, Grant.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So you're Canadian bred, originally from Vancouver, Canada, growing up in a racing family. Your mom's involvement in racing, your dad's a trainer, recently recorded one of his last starts. You know, growing up in that family, have you always wanted to be a trainer? Have you always wanted to be involved in racing? Or were you kind of going in opposite direction and kind of found it again later in life?
Yeah, a little both kind of. I was really into it as a kid. And, you know, I loved working with the horses and would hot walk during summers when I was 12 years old during summer vacation, ride in with my dad to the barn and hot walk. And I always had a real passion for reading the racing form, wondering what my dad's horses were doing. My dad was very successful, so it was fun to be a part of that. That's something you get swept up in, of course, you know, and then you get into your kind of teenage years as a high schooler and the world is out there. And I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s in high school. So like ESPN, you know, SportsCenter, I had visions of being a sports broadcaster or, you know, the next ESPN host, you know, stuff like that. But actually ended up going to the University of Arizona, the racetrack program. My dad, being a trainer, didn't want me to be a trainer like most dads. He wanted his son to do something different. And he wanted me to, you know, end up running a racetrack, you know, rather than being on the horse side of it, which can be very up and down. And went to the racetrack program, loved that at Arizona, and came out of there and took a job with Emerald Downs, working in the media relations department and publicity with some great folks up there. And after doing that for a few years, I just realized that I really wanted to get back working with the horses and growing up as kind of a sports junkie. The competition and the ups and downs of being on a team was much more appealing to me than the mundane stuff that's involved with actually running a racetrack and the details. I just didn't. The highs are really high on our side of the game and the lows are extremely low. But if you can handle the lows, then the highs are really, really rewarding.
No, well said, well said. Yeah, I mean, that horse racing bug, you know, once you get it in you, you can't get it out. So much respect to you to going back to training. But so being an alumni from the RTIP, you know, what do you think your college education has impacted on your career, you know, looking back?
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously we have the program here in Louisville as well that does really well and has produced a lot of great people as well. And for me, at the time, Arizona was definitely the leading program. And the ability to have the symposium that they have every year in December and to meet with all the great industry, you know, big shots, so to speak. But it, for me, it was just the contacts you make. And I did learn, you know, lots as well. There was a lot of stuff going in that I already knew that other people were learning because, you know, my background of being in horse racing, but just the contacts you make. And now as a young trainer, particularly every track that I would go to, there's always an RTIP graduate in the, whether it's in the race office or the publicity department or a steward or, you know, and there's a real fraternity out there of, you know, to help you kind of look after one another, you know, and, you know, whether it's the, you know, NBA and you all went to the University of Kentucky and there's how many guys out there in that fraternity, but in horse racing, the U of A program, there's people at every track that have graduated from that program and have a shared experience you know, I made some lifelong friends there. Probably one of my best friends in the world is been in the news lately, Billy Knopf, who's now in charge with taking over Maryland Racing and going to be in charge of the new Maryland Racing moving forward. He was at Monmouth Park since we graduated in 97 and did a great job there. And so, yeah, you get to know the movers and shakers in the industry, and you get, you know, when I graduated, I think I had 8 to 10 job interviews at big tracks all around the country, and ended up choosing Emerald Downs just because I felt like I might have a chance to move up there quicker at a smaller track. But yeah, just the people you meet and, you know, the where they end up in the industry. And yeah, I think that was the most rewarding part of it for me.
Very cool. Yeah, we have a ton of RTIP graduates here at Equibase as well. And
of course,
many throughout the industry. And so top tier trainers, Todd Pletcher, obviously RTIP alum as well. So very cool. Very cool. So kind of since you began training in 2003, you had your first start at Oakland Park, and your third start ever was in the Grade 3 Essex Handicap with Maker's Mark. How'd right. you go from a student at University of Arizona to training graded stakes horses?
Well, it's a little bit of an interesting story. Actually, I was working for the track in Seattle, like I told you, and really wanted to train horses, and my dad didn't really want me to. So I kind of ran away from home for the winter, that winter of 99-2000. And we had a friend that had a place in the Dominican Republic, and I went down there and spent the winter there working at a restaurant on the beach. And I was like, if I don't do this now, I'll never get to do it. So when I finally convinced my dad, and when I came back that spring, I went to work for him, and he made me start back as a groom. And so I lived in a tack room at Emerald Downs. My dad had a string at Hastings Park and Emerald Downs back then. So I groomed horses that whole summer, became his assistant the next year in 2001. 2002 was his assistant. That 2002, I brought some of my dad's horses back to Keeneland. We could kind of see where, unfortunately, even at that early stage where California racing was going, we were West Coasters. So obviously California was a natural. I spent the two previous winters at Golden Gate with some horses for my dad, but we could kind of see the writing on the wall a little bit in California, unfortunately. And so we came back to Keeneland that fall in 2002, won a really nice allowance race with a Washington bred 2-year-old filly, which was a big deal for everybody back in Washington at the time. And so at the beginning of that year, 2003, we officially switched it over, and I took over head training duty, so to speak, at that point. And my first starter was for Mrs. Whittem, Janice Whittem, who's been a longtime client of my dad's and ours. And obviously the Whittem name is a famous name in the game. And so it was pretty exciting to have my first starter for her. He won. And I still vividly remember calling Mrs. Whittem at the time and saying, I should probably retire right now undefeated. We got off to a great start at Oaklawn that spring, went back out to Emerald Downs that summer, and came back to Kentucky that fall, had a really good fall meet at Churchill, and then for the next several years had horses at Emerald Downs, and we would also keep a small string in the Midwest with some of our better horses for the first few years based at Arlington Park, and I would go back and forth every week between Seattle and Chicago.
Wow. Well, very cool. Very cool. I love that story. So kind of at what point in your career was the turning point when you decided, oh, I want to take my base from the Pacific Northwest and compete in Kentucky?
Yeah, sure. That's I remember it pretty vividly. I was really fortunate. I had a lot of success at Emerald Downs. I was, because of the business, you know, my dad had built up over the years, and I kind of took it and ran with it and had some really, really great clients. Some people that raced in California and in Seattle, you know, a lot of big money people from Seattle that, and one of the gentlemen that my very first year training was, a real pillar of the sport out there, Mr. Herman Sarkowski, who of course owned Phone Chatter, that won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and was half owner, I believe, of Dixie Union, and had a lot of nice horses over the years with Richard Mandela. And, he had a half brother to Dixie Union, that he retired, called He's Tops. And he was with Richard Mandela in training, and he'd got a really bad lung infection, and he only got to run 3 or 4 times, and he just couldn't breathe very well. He was very talented. So Mr. Sarkowski had just started to stand him at stud prior to me beginning to train for him. And so we had all these homebreds for him by He's Tops, and we were able to win the Long Acres Mile for him, which was a dream of his, being a Seattle guy. And with a horse called No Giveaway at 60-1. And that was my third year training. And growing up in the Northwest, if you could, the pinnacle of racing was the Long Acres Mile, to be able to win that. You know, I'm sure you guys know a lot of the history, but there's a ton of Hall of Fame jockeys and trainers that won the race over the year back at Long Acres, and some really interesting horses, including Skywalker. And I could go down the list, of course. But anyways, when I won that race in 2005, and I felt like I'd already accomplished my goal starting out as a trainer in the Northwest. So, and I'd already had a little taste of racing at Oaklawn and Kentucky. And so I've never been really a big fish in a small pond kind of guy. I was much more excited about being a little fish in the big pond back here in Kentucky and seeing what we could do here. So it's a couple more years after that. We kept a string out there at Emerald for the next couple summers, but my eye was always on getting back to the Midwest and Kentucky, basically. And back then we used to winter at Oaklawn, which we've since switched to New Orleans for the last 10 or 11 years. But yeah, that was kind of the real catalyst for me. I felt like I'd accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and time to go on and set new goals for yourself and see what you can do.
I love that. I love that. And yeah, speaking of the Long Acres Mile, you just won that with Five Star General, your highest earning horse in your career. I mean, what does that horse mean to you? And also, the fans want to know, we want to know, where is he going to stand next year for stud?
Yeah, it should be announced shortly. I believe most of the parameters are in place. He's going to be standing at a farm in Virginia. So hope we're excited about that, excited about the group the gentleman that owns the farm there. That is, it's a newer gentleman there in Virginia. But yeah, Five Star General came to me as a 6-year-old, which is not something you typically take on. But I knew the history of the horse, and he was owned by Glenn Todd, who of course passed away out west, but was the biggest horse owner in Vancouver. And my brother ran Glenn Todd's bar and grill for about 13 years. It's called the Derby Bar and Grill, just right at the border between Seattle and Vancouver, and has off-track betting. And so I knew, I had followed the horse for years. And when his trainer in Seattle was retiring, Doris Harwood, she recommended to the owner, Kenny L. Hadiff, to send him back here to give the horse some opportunities back here with me. And yeah, it was a dream scenario. The horse is, you know, probably the soundest, toughest horse I've ever been around, and just laid it on the line for us every time we let him over there. It was just a super fun horse. We've had some really fun wins with him, but, you know, highlighted definitely by being able to go back out and win the Long Acres Mile last year, which was really special, and getting to see a lot of old friends. And then, you know, to be able to go back and try and do it back to back, and the way he won it this year so dramatically, and basically the last jump of the race, and just showed every ounce of heart that he had. And so, yeah, he's a special horse that will always live in my heart forever, of course. And we're excited to see that. You know, I think he has everything that people are looking for in breeding right now, which is soundness, durability, speed. He's a gorgeous individual. He won several races without Lasix and ran well without Lasix. So basically everything that we're looking to breed right now, he possesses, and being a son of the great Distorted Humor as well, and out of a really nice Phipps family. So there's other than his, he never won a grade two or grade two, you know, grade one or grade two in America. His only grade three win was unfortunately just the BC Derby back in Vancouver, because that's where he was based. But you know, ran well in other graded races here, and hopefully he gets a decent chance at it. And I'm excited about hopefully getting to train some of his offspring someday for sure.
Yeah, love it. All comes back around, right? And I think Virginia, that's a perfect place for him. No, really good.
I agree. I think Virginia is a place that's really on the come right now, obviously with Churchill owning Colonial and taking on more racing days. They're, you know, as you guys know, they're adding the that extra week in March next year with the Derby prep. So I, you know, in racing or in life or in business, you're either going up or you're going down. There's no static. And I think Virginia is a place that's definitely on the upswing. And obviously the reports about all the great turf courses they have at Colonial, and the racing getting better there all the time. I think it's a perfect spot for him to come in at this time.
Love it. And, you know, hearing you talk about your horses, you're obviously so passionate about the sport, and you truly care about them. And you're known, you know, at the racetrack of having such good communication with your clients and bringing everybody in together as a big party, and it's fun and relatively smaller stable. You know, can you tell us about Team Forrester, you know, and that camaraderie that you have as an ownership group, and how you can get involved?
Yeah, sure. I think you know, and I think part of that, you know, that goes back to my education. You know, I'm probably a failed writer. I'd love to be a writer if I wasn't a horse trainer. I love writing, so I love sending emails to the owners and clients, and it's great, you know, with texting and emails and stuff, that it's really easy to keep up with owners and keep them. I know if I owned a horse, I'd be wondering how it was doing every day. And so I try to keep that in mind with my clients, like, you know, try to keep them in constant contact about what's going on with the horse, whether it's a little quick video or an email or just even a two-line text message that everything was great today. Can't, you know, we're doing this tomorrow or whatever. So, but yeah, we've done a lot of our own syndicates to try and build up the business and get a lot of ham and eggers involved. As I say, we don't have a lot of sheiks on the team. So, but yeah, our website is teamforster.net. We're always looking for new opportunities. We get people involved at a reasonable rate, and there's a lot of communication. As most people know, I have a house right across the street from Churchill Downs, so we have a pretty legendary Derby Week party or festival at this point it's become. And yeah, we like to get everybody involved, and a lot of people in our groups have made lifelong friends, and they go off and have been involved doing other stuff on their own or going on trips together. And we really take a lot of pride in getting people together and like-minded people that love going to the races and love handicapping and love being a part of the game.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Grant, one of the parts about communicating with clients is telling them where the horse is going to run. And whenever we have trainers on, I think it's part of the interesting thing to kind of pick their brain about properly spotting horses to win. Mm-hmm. You know, since you run all over the multiple tracks, wide range of conditions and class, talk to me a little bit about selecting spots to run your horses that gives them the best chance to win. And then secondarily, sometimes having to tell a client that this may not be a Derby style horse, this may be a level claiming horse. And that second part, I think, is just as interesting as how you find spots that give them the best chance to win from a trainer.
Yeah, it's never fun shattering dreams for sure. But yeah, you have to place the horses realistically. And unfortunately, in this day and age, a lot of times we end up running with the races that fill. A lot of times, you know, we'd love to run a horse for 20,000 claiming, and the 20 doesn't fill, the 25 doesn't fill, and then you end up in for 32. And now you're thinking you're going to be 5-2 or less, now you're 6-1. And so I think as handicappers, you know, everyone needs to keep that in mind, that that's not always the race that maybe you were pointing for. Just because, as you know, with shorter fields these days and with like I said, you just sometimes the races that you're pointing for don't fill, and you can't just leave the horse in the barn. You have to run. So yeah, and it depends. Some owners like to be more aggressive. Some owners like to, you know, want to protect their investment for another race or two. And it's my job as the trainer to really protect their investment, but also to be telling them, is this horse going the right way or the wrong way? Like, is it okay? Our race didn't fill for 20. Now we have to run for 32,000 claim and say, is this horse doing well enough to take a shot at that? Or are we better off going lower and maybe losing the horse? But I think the horse has a limited career moving forward, or I just don't think this horse is what we think the horse is going to be. So trying to, you're always evaluating that after every work, after every race. But yeah, a lot of times as a trainer and owner, now you're put in a position of getting the horses just into the races that are available and fill. And that's a constant struggle, both for the racing secretary and for the trainers. So, you know, it's something to keep in mind when you're handicapping, for sure, that if you see a horse that just ran second for 20, and why does this guy have it in for 30, or why does, you know, what? So it's just sometimes a matter of just the races didn't fill that you wanted to run back in.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Grant. This has been fantastic and an honor to talk to you. And thank you for being on, all the wonderful insight. And be sure to check out teamforester.net to get involved with Team Forester. So thank you very much, Grant.
Oh, thank you, guys. I love talking horses anytime. And hopefully we'll see you at the Derby party.
Sounds good. We'll see you there.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks. You too. Yeah, be sure to check that out, Team Forester. .net. Amazing Derby party, probably the best Derby party I've ever been to, hands down. That's right across the street from Churchill, and they go all night long. So
that's a good time. Well, good. That was fun. I think that he has a good a lot of insights that people, both handicappers and breeders and owners and folks that just want to experience the game, kind of should take from that. And it was, that was fun to dig in a little bit with them.
Yeah. I love that last question of yours. Yeah. It's always, that's so tough for a trainer. Do you go up to a 32 or down to a 16 or a 10 or, I mean, it's just such difficult decisions for.
And I think he's spot on about horses, races that fill. When that condition book comes out, you may be pointing towards a race, but if it doesn't fill, you got to pick another angle. And then to be able to say, do I drop and try to, you know, win a purse and potentially lose the horse? Do I put the horse in a more competitive spot, going a different distance? And just being able to evaluate a lot of this. And I know people that listen to this probably understand how those condition books are put out and how people have to, you know, find races that fit the conditions, the distance, the proclivity of the horse, and then of course dovetail that with disseminating the message to the owners. It gets really complicated, and the trainers that do that well are those the most successful ones.
I agree. I mean, how many times, you know, you and I go through these grade one, grade two races, and you see a horse coming from an allowance optional, you know, at Hawthorne, you know, going in, you're like, what, you know, why, you know? So he had some great insight there for those types of decisions. But speaking of Canadian breds, we have a wonderful Saturday of racing ahead at Woodbine. So we'll be going over the grade two Autumn Stakes and the grade two Kennedy Road Stakes. Let's just dive right in to this grade two Autumn Stakes at Woodbine, a mile and the eighth on the Tapeta for three-year-olds and up. Last year's winner was Wolfie's Dinah Ghost, who romped by 4.5 lengths for trainer Jonathan Thomas with Kazushi Kimura aboard. Full field of 12 here with Mark Cassie and Kevin Attard, both with a couple entries. Lots of value, and I will tell you later why I'm going with a 20-1 shot in here. But first, let's hear from the mighty Corey Patton.
Oh, mighty. I love that. I'm going with an interesting one in here on the far outside. I'm going with Forever Super.
Okay.
I think this horse is an interesting horse. I really love the breeding. Of course, it's a five-year-old, so that's, you take a little bit less into that at this point because you've seen performance. But this horse just loves to win races. All right. I mean, he's won his last three, hasn't finished out of the money since October of last year over a sloppy track at Keeneland. Ten of his last 11 races, he was in the money, including seven wins. Just that's when I love to see horses that like to win races. And yes, he hasn't been running at the best tracks. I mean, Presque Isle Downs, Laurel, also hasn't run in a graded stakes in his career. So, you know, that does stand out. But he has won at Gulfstream multiple times in the past. And he did set the Presque Isle track record in that mile.
He did. Last race.
So that says something, right?
Can you believe he only got a 95 Equibase speed figure for that, by the way?
I saw that and that was kind of interesting, but we're not going to pick on Equibase speed figures today, right? But it's, you know, 95 in that. But he does love the all-weather surface, 3 for 3 over the surface. Loves the mile and an eighth distance, 3 of 4 there. Trombetta wins at 22% in stakes races over the last year. You know, Trombetta hasn't won at the meet so far, but he does win 18% all time at Woodbine, so gets it done. You know, picks up Rafael Hernandez, been winning 20% this meet. He does have to, you know, break from the far outside, but post 12 at 9 furlongs at on the Tapeta at Woodbine is 1 for 2 in the last year. So 50%, so can be done. Trying to pick things there. Right. But, you know, the horse has been off since September, hasn't really missed a beat in its training at this point. I think it should sit a decent trip. Just off the speed and then potentially get up in time at a bit of a price. You know, the only caution I could see is that, you know, all time together, Hernandez and Trombetta at Woodbine, 0 for 6 and just 1 for 8 all time together in races. But I just looked at this horse and I said, it's going to give everything it's got. There's a reason Trombetta's bringing him to Woodbine. And, you know, I think Rafael can get it done, and let's look for a price.
I love it. You know, I'm so surprised that he's 3 to 1 morning line. It came out right before we started.
I didn't even see the morning line, honestly.
It just came out literally like 10 minutes before we started recording. So I wrote him down really quick. But he's 3 to 1.
Okay, I'm absolutely shocked at that morning line. I did not even see it before. Yeah, we must have been talking.
He's actually less of a price than Paramount Prince at 7 to 2.
Oh, gosh. Well, in that case, all right. No, I'll stick with my pick. Go ahead.
First Lasix. Or first Lasix since what last like 9 starts. So that's definitely good sign. I mean, there's a lot of speed though. I mean, with Paramount Prince and what Lag Mazaka, Never Surprise, they're probably gonna go to the front. 12 will be a little bit tough out there, but I definitely looked at that horse quite a bit, and I just couldn't get over the Laurel Monmouth Tampa Pascal. I think there was other value out there. I'm actually going with a 20-1 here. Tozen Wish, the two. The other Mark Cassie, the non-favored Mark Cassie. Interesting team, Team Valor International owned horse, making his third start in North America. Coming off a nice win in AOC 80K at Woodbine last time out. He closed incredibly well in that race and looked like he was just not going to get there, but surged late. And I do want to watch this stretch run because it was very impressive to me. And he broke dead last. And basically the whole race, he was 10 lengths off the lead. And coming into the final turn here, he's the three. He's still second to last.
Toes and Wish finishing and pretty.
You'll see when he tries to make a move. Look at that wall of five horses there, starting with the two. I mean, he's just got nowhere to go, nowhere to go. Just kind of sitting patient. He tries to go out, but at the same time, then the seven on the outside's going, then checks a little bit with the six. You know, and okay, at this point, he could probably fold like a shirt. Nothing's really going to happen. And then, boom, shows the whip and just goes. I mean, really impressive race to me. I know it was an AOC 80,000, but nonetheless, it was still a very good race. His first race in North America was AOC 62.5 at Saratoga, where he got bumped at the break. Just never really part of the race. I'm going to scratch that off. But here's why I really like this horse. I think, this will be the second time on Lasix ever in this race. And Mark Cassie wins at 38% and 63% in the money in the last 3 years in graded stakes with horse's second time on Lasix. So I think that's huge. I love this furlong stretch out for this horse as well. Never been at this distance, but based on that last race, he could really benefit from some more running room. He's going from turf to all weather. However, this horse is four starts all time in the all weather with two wins and 2 seconds. Definitely not worried about that. And his only two starts in North America, he ran a 99 and a 104 equibase speed figure, which definitely matches up with the other contenders here. The last 3 years, Cassie and Savachi went at 26% in the all-weather at Woodbine. All races claiming maiden stakes allowance. 53 wins from 207 starts and 64% in the money. Also had a really nice work on November 1st, four furlongs and 48 and 8. And a really nice late pace rating of a 111.5. I didn't know what I was going to get handicap in this race for morning line. I really had no idea, but 20-1, I am stoked about.
You are talking me a bit into this horse, considering if you look at those races in England and Ireland on the all weather, just some bangers there.
Yeah, really good performances. And he's never run under 100 on the all weather.
I mean, look at that. And then has been running with nothing but turf since, goes back to the all weather, which plays a little bit softer. And I think it's going to be an interesting race, the way that that horse, you just showed that back class race replay. So knowing that I just got 3-1 on my horse on the outside coming from Presque Isle, right. I'm buying into a little bit what you're selling.
No, I mean, the more I looked at him, I was like, wow, this horse is okay. And the second time Lasix for me, that's huge. And he saw what he's able to do on Lasix for the first time ever. So I think he's going to run back really, really well. And I think this is a perfect spot for him. You know, it's a grade two, but kind of how it's stacked up is more kind of like a grade three, in my humble opinion. But another interesting horse I thought was going to be the favorite, actually. I want to hear what you have to say about this horse. He's 8-1. Dresden Row, the 11th.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. You know, he just never loses.
Well, I mean, look at those percentages. I mean, it is a this horse just runs his eyeballs out, and I really thought that horse would be the favorite. But 8-1, that's incredible. Look at the jockey combination number, 58%.
Yeah, I mean, this year they're 3-for-3.
Yeah, astonishing, right? So, I mean, they get it done. They know how to get it done. And Woodbine's got that, you know, that nice work coming into this thing. Should probably be up on the pace. There's a good amount of pace coming on this race. So I think you should probably get, you know, this horse should be in the mix the whole way around. I mean, just the numbers there, the distance to surface, 40%. Like, it's, you know, they know how to get it done together. And stakes races there as well. So it's, I thought that horse, honestly, not knowing Morning Lions, would be somewhere in that 3-1, 7-2 line. But 8-1, that's value there for sure.
Yeah, and two out of three of his races he lost, which were all in the money, by the way, were on turf. You know, so we're going back to his favorite surface. So yeah, 8-1. I mean, I'm going to take that horse every day. I'm gonna box those two up, Toes and Wish and Drazen Run. That could be a monster.
The other one that Well, the other one that I looked at a bit underneath was on the rail, Artie Storm.
Oh, I was just going to bring that up. I love it.
I looked at that and I said, okay, here's an angle that I really like to look at. Okay, look at that last race, that six and a half furlong race at AOC, off of that incredibly long, almost year-long layoff, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Brings him back almost a year later, gets a nice prep 6.5 under his yeah. belt, you know, and says, okay, We're ready to go. We're going to stretch this horse back out. He had that 107 off the year-long layoff, which is a very nice speed figure off of that. Yeah. Post one has had the most wins and wins at 70% over the past year in 9 furlong races at Woodbine. Can get it done from the rail. Should sit a decent trip, just slightly off. Doesn't have to make the lead and is not going to drop way out of it. Has 5 consecutive triple-figure pace ratings. Can sit and make one run, and you know, Buttigieg is 24% with horses that won their last race. So give it a look. It's I mean, honestly, could sit a decent trip and might be overlooked. What's the morning line for that one?
10-1.
I know.
And here's, I was talking with Ellis Starr about this race yesterday, and here's a great stat he found. The last 5 years, trainer Pete Buttigieg with horses in route races who won their most recent start. 31% win percentage and 38% in the money, 144% positive ROI. That's in the last 5 years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. All right.
I know. You know, he kind of talked me a little bit on that horse as well. And he also has the best average speed in here with a 103.
Well, those 5 straight triple figures will stare you right in the face. And then to be able to do it off of a year long layoff. Now, I mean, he has run in this race twice before and not yeah. really competed, but maybe third time's
charm. 15 lengths in the end, 7.5. But I don't know. He still could be a good play for underneath, especially if he stays at 10-1. I doubt he'll stay at 10-1.
No, no way. No way. But interesting race nonetheless. So we have it surrounded at this point.
Yeah. And then also the 6-horse War Bombers also cross entered in the Kennedy Road Stakes, but he's a full sprinter. I would yeah. expect him to go to the Kennedy Road, but we shall see on Saturday. But there you go. So I'll be going with Toes and Wish, and Corey will be going with Forever Super. So there is your autumn stakes, and let's move on to the Grade Two Kennedy Road Stakes, also at Woodbine, 6 furlongs in the Tapeta for 3-year-olds and up. Last year's winner was Flag of Honor for trainer Julia Carey with Kazushi Kimura aboard by nose over Ice Chocolat, who saw win the Grade 3 Poker Stakes at Saratoga back in June. Flag of Honor is back in this race on Saturday to try and defend his title. Short field of 6 here. We'll see where War Bomber goes as well. Huge 4-5 morning line favorite with the 1. But what are your thoughts? Trying to pick value in here? Are you going with Patches O'Houlihan?
I mean, what a great name, too. But I know, right? How do you not root for Patches O'Houlihan, right? But I think that's clearly the horse to beat. I mean, I am going to go in another direction, but clearly the horse to beat is Patches O'Houlihan, winner of 10 of his last 11 races. I mean, how do you overlook the ones on that page, right?
And he just lost 2 races in his life.
I mean, just loves this track. Just loves this track, right? And I think he probably has every right to win again on Saturday, but you're going to like this. I am going to a horse you and I loved at Kentucky Downs earlier this year in No Balls. I'm doing it.
I'm doing it.
I mean, I think if you look at that horse's running lines, I mean, Patches O'Houlihan is definitely going to probably get the lead in my mind, but I don't think that it's going to be necessarily something of significance. I think No Balls, if you look at it, has not been off the turf since March of 2023 at Turfway. Right. So now trying something completely different. And if you look at his performance since the layoff following the Breeders' Cup win back at the Breeders' Cup turf sprint race, he barely missed at Saratoga, lost to Cogburn at Kentucky Towns, and hated the Keeneland sod in his last. It's just, you know, never run well on the Keeneland turf if you go back and look at his race either. So I can excuse all of this. I'm trainer Ravelli, Larry Ravelli, 20% winner all time at Keeneland, at Woodbine. Wins at 20% stakes races over the past year. Ravelli and Corrales have never teamed up together at Woodbine, but it doesn't scare me with this horse. Yes, 5 wins over artificial surfaces and 7 of 8 in the exact over the surface, so can get it done. I think he's at this point, he's 1-for-2 at Woodbine over it. Chased the likes of Cogburn over the past year, including beating him in the Breeders' Cup turf sprint last year, so has the class to clearly get this done. You know, gets LASIKs. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and that's where he barely missed. The first time he had LASIK since that Breeders' Cup, he barely missed at Saratoga, and then the last two starts went without it. Now he's back on. I think that's huge.
I think it's enormous. I mean, he has that 47-4 at Turfway on November 9th, says ready. And then if you think Patches has the lead, if you think Patches is going to get the lead, we can talk about this second, but if Patches can be on the lead, over the past 30 days, only 5 of 20 race leaders after a half mile in 6 furlong all-weather races at Woodbine have held on to win. That's like a 25% win rate, you know, and 5 seconds, 1/3, 11 times in the money. The other 9 have run out after a 4 furlong. So doesn't necessarily translate to winning and holding on this track at that distance. So I'm going to give No Balls the chance to be kind of close and then gobble them up at the end and potentially grab the race out from under Patches. So I know you're kind of aligned. Give me your
So what my biggest fear is, I'll start with that, is that Patches O'Houlihan will go out on the lead and have like a 23 4/5 seconds, and he's out there by like 3.5 lengths by himself, which is very plausible based on looking at these other horses' past performances. But you never know. I agree that that's how I want the race to stack up, is that No Balls will come at the end. Maybe the last couple of furlongs is in the lead. But yeah, going back to the LASIK, so interesting stat. I really had to go back quite a ways for this, but Revelli wins at 28% in stakes races with horses going back on LASIK. Has 9 wins from 32 starts in the last 3 years. So I thought that was an interesting stat going back. But yeah, he's my pick for the grade 2 turf sprint Kentucky Downs as well. Coming from that Larry Valley barn, Nobles and Two Fills are his best horses of all time. Two Fills, I believe, is standing at Windstar, but we still get to see No Balls run, which is cool. Hasn't run back since that, I guess since that Breeders' Cup turf sprint. But like you said, I can kind of throw out those other races. Keeneland especially, I was in the paddock watching him, and he looked great. But yeah, he just doesn't take to Keeneland, you know, and is what it is. I'm, you know, horses for courses. So I'm, you know, not gonna knock him for that. Another cool stat with this horse. So in the last 3 years, Revelli wins at 30% and 48% in the money with horses going from turf to all weather on stakes races. 8 wins from 27 starts. So that's another very positive. This is, you know, not the greatest stat in the world, but it still is a stat. Corrales and Revelli win at 38% in great stakes races together in the last 3 years with 5 different horses, though. I will give that. Plus 573% ROI on 26 median win. You know, probably a little inflated, but a stat's a stat. Been working well at Turfway as well. I look at that last work, 4 furlongs and 47.7, ranked second of 106 horses. So I don't know. He's 6-1, by the way.
I'm loving every second of that because Patches deserve to be favored.
He's 4-5 morning line. Patches of Julian. Yeah.
One more stat with Revelli. Six furlongs on the taffeta surface, on the all weather surface, 34% out of 179 horses. And I mean, that's winning at 34% with that type of sample size is huge. So
that is huge.
I think it's going to be this is a horse to play. Again, Patches, I worry when I try to get the half times and try to match up splits that there's just nobody that's going to go with him. But potentially Nobles has some in the back, in his back class, where he's gone a little faster than what he showed in his last couple, but I don't know. I just think that the Patches will definitely have the lead the race sets up. And I'm hoping he can sit not too far off.
Yeah. You know what? Another thing he could do, kind of like that grade 3 Troy, he might just say, F it, I'm going too.
Yeah.
You know, he might just go right up with him. I mean, we'll see. You know, that might set up for a very different race after that. But I think it's between these two horses, hands down. I mean, I don't really see anybody else in here. I mean, that Ian Hardy Godolphin horse was a little interesting. But, you know, obviously, Patches O'Houlihan beat him pretty handedly last time. But
the others in here have faced each other, and Patches has dispatched them. So, and that one race when Flag of Honor won was not exactly, it didn't set up well at all. So I just think Patches is the horse to beat in here for sure. And No Balls, it's a horse you and I have followed and liked for a long time, and there are some stats to support it. And so I'm going to try to take
Well, and another thing about Patches O'Houlihan too, which is, you know, going back on patterns, he had the exact same pattern going into the Kennedy Road, Bold Venture, the Vigil, Kennedy Road. Then does it again, Bold Venture, Vigil, grade 2 last time out, now going again back in the Kennedy Road. And that was where he got 5th in that Kennedy Road last year. So, you know, there is a chance for him to lose. And that was at 2-1 that he lost. So, you know, there's definitely some value. But I think that there's going to be big value, big odds for both of these races at Woodbine. So I'm excited to bet.
I'm looking forward to it, and doubles abound there. So enjoy.
Love it. Well, there you have it. We're both going with no ball. So thank you, everybody, so much for watching. Good luck in your wagers this weekend, and we'll see you next week.